Radio Berkshire with me, Paul Coyer, coming up to 7 minutes after 12. And yes, being a Saturday afternoon, it's our usual tech talk, our problem solving and latest information from the gadget detective Fevzi Tourkarp. And you can find Fevzi on Twitter at Gadget Detective. You can also find him on BBC Radio Berkshire because here he is. Morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Oh, good. I'm going to turn you up a wee bit. Are you a bit shy today, or is it my volume?
No, I've got full level at this end.
Oh,
I get a bit closer.
Yeah.
Oh. How's that?
Oh, lovely. Very sexy. Yeah, lovely. I just realised how ridiculous it was me saying, are you a bit shy? Fevzi, never known to be shy, are you?
No, it's not one of my known traits, it's true. as we'll see in a moment.
Exactly. This is where I put my feet up and sit back for 3/4 of an hour while you tell me what's happening, including the new information about the information commissioner that we have here in the UK.
Yeah, so we're getting a new information commissioner who is a regulator, whose remit up until this point was primarily to protect the digital data and privacy rights of UK citizens. But there's a new commissioner in town, a new data regulator at the Information Commissioner's office. He's currently the New Zealand Privacy Commissioner. Now, I'm not so concerned with this guy because I think his credentials are okay, but the government has announced they've changed. It said he would go beyond the regulator's traditional role, and the job would now be balanced between protecting rights and promoting, and I quote, innovation and economic growth. Now, this is kind of bizarre. A regulator of this sort would not normally have to balance these considerations. You'd have a business minister or a trade minister, and, you know, the government would fight out the different departments. But this role has traditionally been, and I think should be, to protect UK individuals from companies who would otherwise trample over our privacy rights. Now, the background to this is that when we were in the European Union, we were under what was known as GDPR regulations, which regulate how companies can store, use, and treat our information, personal information that they get as we use the internet and their websites in particular. Mm. When we left the EU, all of those rules were transferred en bloc into English law, which, you know, most people would say was a good thing.
Yep.
But now we're outside, they have the ability to diverge, and it seems that that's what they're doing. And if the regulator will now be balancing our privacy rights against trade and business, you know, to make it more attractive for businesses to trade here at the expense of our privacy. So it would be, for example, potentially more attractive for Facebook to be here because they'll be able to do things with our data that they're not allowed to do with those of European citizens. So just as at the moment, American citizens don't have the same protections as European ones, it seems that we soon will not have the same protections. And this is a concern all across the board. I mean, for example, you know, the rights of workers and so forth, will workers lose certain rights that they currently have? So this is a worry. I think it's whatever decisions they make, I think the remit is wrong. This idea that there's a regulator who has to have an eye on what effect it has on trade.
I mean, it sounds to me, Fevzi, that there's a conflict there. How can you protect people's data at the same time as allowing companies to data mine it to improve their economic performance?
Yeah.
I mean, the two would seem to me, as an innocent man in the street, to be incompatible.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it's interesting because an example of one change that they're wanting to make is, you know, at the moment, websites, when you first visit them and sometimes when you repeatedly visit them, ask you what cookies they're allowed to store, i.e. what information about you that they're allowed to store. And you can tick, you know, the bare minimum to make the website work through to allowing them to track you across different websites. Now, they're saying, oh, that's intrusive because we keep getting asked about it and people don't like it. And that part of it is true. But the answer to that is not to abolish the need to allow us to control how websites use our data and what data they capture, but it is to make sure that first of all, that we don't get asked repeatedly, that our preferences in that respect get recorded and respected, and essentially that we are protected. We don't say, oh, it's inconvenient to assert our protections, therefore the answer to that is to remove our protections. That's just the wrong way around. And it really worries me that we're going to become this sort of data privacy bargain basement where companies can set up shop here and just do what they like with the data of UK citizens. And the other problem with this, it was only in late June that the European Union accepted that data about EU citizens and could flow into UK businesses. Yeah, and that's essential for a number of reasons. For example, if our businesses want to sell to citizens in the European Union, or in fact in the European Economic Area as a whole, then we need obviously to be able to capture their information. Now, they did that on the basis that our rules were essentially the same as GDPR rules, the European rules. Hmm. But that's not going to be the case. And although they've agreed it for 4 years, they did say at the time they will step in if our rules diverge significantly from theirs and reduce protection of the data of their citizens, then they're not going to allow their citizens' data. So how will we trade? And what will happen when, you know, our law enforcement needs data from the European Union, but they're already not protections? They are already not sending data across for matters to do with immigration, because they say our immigration rules aren't compliant with theirs.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, they're trying to fix what they see as a problem, but actually they're going to cause a whole bunch of other problems. And my fundamental concern is that our privacy will be affected. The EU rules need to go further, be honed, and protect us more as technology develops and more is possible. And we were talking not long about the metaverse, how we were all going to live in this virtual world. Do you really want to live in a world owned by Facebook where there's no real regulation about what Facebook does with your information?
I think we know the answer to that. Yeah, it's funny that in the analog days, the old analog days, life was much simpler. They'd just say on the phone when you phoned a company, "We'd like to send you emails and update you with marketing opportunities. May we?" And you go, "Nope." And they go, "All right, thanks." And that was it. You didn't get fussed and bothered by them.
Well, yeah, and also in the analog world, you still have things that work in that. You have the TPS, the telephone preference service, and I think the FPS for even faxes, I think, still existed. So with telephone preference service, you can put your name on their list, and then companies who do cold calling have to check their call list to make sure that your name isn't on the TPS list. And if it is, they're meant to remove it. And if they don't, they get fined. Hmm. So, but we're losing the analog of that, if you can reappropriate your term. We're using the equivalent of that in the digital world, and the world is increasingly digital. So we're losing protections in reality, because the digital world is the real world. You know, this is where we spend our time and conduct ourselves, be it personally or in business.
So this guy John Edwards has got a hell of a job on his hands. Fevzi, gadget of the week: does the world really need another webcam?
Well, it's quite interesting. So this is a webcam. It's called the Anker PowerConf, as in short for Power Conference, I guess, C300. And I guess the context for this is, a year ago you couldn't get webcams for love nor money. You know, people were selling them for well, you could get them for money, actually, because they were selling them for two or three times the retail price, but you couldn't get them for love, certainly. So now it's started to improve. Webcams from various companies start to become available again. And at this point, Anker has stuck their toe in the water with its own webcam. And to answer your question, the reason why I've decided to cover this one as a gadget of the week this week is because it has some quite special, dare I say, unique features that are associated with technology that's usually a lot more expensive. So I kind of like this. So this is a webcam. It fits to a laptop or a desktop computer. It will generally give you a much better picture than the webcam built into a laptop, for example. And desktops typically don't come with webcams. So if you want to do video calling, if you want to do video streaming, anything like that, you want to participate in online lessons and they need to see your face, then this is a device that you can use. Now, what's special about it? First of all, the basic quality of it. You know, webcams, like all cameras, have different resolutions. This one is full 1080p. That's to say full HD. So when you buy a full HD TV set, you have 1080 lines of resolution. This does that as well. In addition to that, most 1080p webcameras that are available today can do a maximum of 30 frames per second. This can do 60 frames per second, which means you get a more fluid motion, less jerkiness, mm-hmm. much more smooth movements. Particularly useful if you're one of these people who sort of like wave your hands around a lot when you talk or move in the frame. The other thing about it that I liked, it's got dual microphones, so they actually work together to provide what's called active noise cancellation. One microphone can't really tell the difference between your voice and background noise, but by having a differently positioned microphone, it can tell what's coming from you in front of the camera as opposed to what's coming from the surroundings, and that way it can cancel out the background noise. So if you're in a slightly noisy environment, then it will, you know, improve by focusing more on your voice. The other thing I liked about it, which is something that we see on the latest generation of iPad Pros, is face tracking. So as you move around, if you're a person who moves within the frame, so it's one thing if you're sitting at a desk and you know you're doing a Zoom call and you're not moving, fine, face tracking not so important. But if you're using it to, I don't know, walk around the kitchen, you know, maybe you're doing a cookery show, or maybe you just want to move around, and you can do that, and it automatically recognizes your face and moves around. Now the other feature that is really nice is the field of view. Now normally a camera has a fixed field of view, which if it has a zoom lens, you could zoom manually when you wanted to the crop that you wanted. Do you want wide angle to encompass several people, or do you want it cropped short to your head and shoulders? What this does is it uses a form of AI software to detect what's going on in the frame in front of it. So it could be that there's a narrow crop with, let's say, 78 degrees, which is fairly narrow, it'd be by my head and shoulders and upper body, and then someone else comes into the frame, and as it does that, it detects that there's a second person, and it chooses automatically a wider field of view, mm-hmm. 90 degrees or even right out to 150 degrees. So if people, you know, let's say, you know, you're on a video call to your loved one, and then your kids bundle up next to you and suddenly, but they can be heard, but they're not seen. That's traditionally what happens. Now the camera detects that there's more people in front of the camera, and it widens its field of view to include those people. Cool. And as the personal people move around, it will track them as far as it can. So it has a number of really nice features. It has a privacy shield, which I don't understand why it's not standard on everything. It's just a piece of plastic that physically you can slide over the lens.
Right.
Because whilst your camera is connected, if you don't have that, you're relying on the software not to be compromised and to tell you that the camera is really off. Well, you can't really do that with the microphone for sure unless you pull the cable, but at least with this little sliding door, you can actually slide it over the lens and you know for a fact that it can't see you. It's a nice thing to have. So all in all, you know, it's got a unique set, a combination of features which I quite liked, and I think some of those will be really useful, particularly for domestic use. I thought, you know, the family use of it would be quite good.
So is it really expensive?
Well, yes and no. List price is about £120, penny short. Mm. I noticed today, just before we went to air, on a well-known website named after a South American river, that they're actually selling it for a penny less than 80 quid. Now, at that price, I've given it 4 stars, because at £80, that's not bad. But do shop around, because actually there's some good deals now to be had. When I say good deals to be had on webcams, I mean normal prices have resumed, as opposed to you know, what it was this time last year, where you could have paid a couple of hundred quid for a webcam that would have sold for 60 previously.
Brilliant. $79.99, that's a heck of a discount. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much indeed, Fevzi. Fevzi runs the Gadget Detective website that you can find at www.gadgetdetective.com. It's been a pleasure chatting with you over the past few weeks, Fevzi.
And pleasure's
Bill
mine.
Will be back with you later. Oh, thank you. Speak to you soon. Have a great weekend.
Cheers.